Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Barsha.
And I'm so happy to be back. Like I said last week, we came back from an unplanned hiatus, and it just feels really good to be back recording.
Yeah, it feels really, really good.
It does. And Barsha, you're in D.C. now.
I am in D.C. I'm going to be researching in D.C. this summer for my dissertation and for a professor that I work for. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm in the nation's swamp. I mean, capital.
Wait, remind everyone what your dissertation is on.
Yeah, so my dissertation is on U.S. foreign policy, specifically foreign lending with the World Bank and the IMF to countries like India and Pakistan for giant dam projects. So I look at dam projects mainly in the 1970s and 80s, specifically how the environmental movements in the 1980s sort of pushed back against big dam construction, mainly because of how detrimental it was towards the people in these communities, as well as the environment. And I look at how that affects U.S. foreign policy towards these countries, specifically U.S. and India, but I'm hoping to make it a global project where I look at cases in Pakistan, maybe the Middle East, and Latin America as well.
It's such a cool topic, and I wouldn't have said that, you know, a year ago. But I'm sorry. But I read your paper, the one that you presented, and it was awesome. And you made dams super interesting.
I know. Dams are really cool. People don't realize, but they are super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm just kidding. No, they are really cool. Yeah. It's actually a super interesting topic, and one that I people don't really think about money and foreign policy and lending. You know, we talk a lot about it in terms of war.
Yeah.
And in terms of how we lend money and resources for war. But when you talk about these other types of projects, I think it's just a fascinating look at how the U.S. approaches foreign policy in general.
Yeah.
And then specifically to these environmental and a lot of times racial factors.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, so recently the U.S. customarily chooses the president of the World Bank, right? So recently the Trump administration chose a guy who actually criticized the World Bank because that is the brand of the Trump administration. And, you know, there's a lot to criticize the World Bank for, but, you know, basically I think what's really interesting about the World Bank is that it is institution heavy. It has a lot of norms and procedures. So even though you have a leader who doesn't really like what it does and has a lot of critiques of it and has some misguided interpretations of how to deal with China, a lot of World Bank employees are actually hopeful that he won't be able to change a lot, especially when you look back at previous World Bank presidents, in that they're able to change a few things, but not a lot. And so I think that's sort of what's interesting about a lot of things of foreign policy, is that we don't talk a lot about it on the show, but a lot of things do bounce back to a certain equilibrium, and that equilibrium isn't always perfect, and it's not always the best one, but sometimes they do bounce back. Obviously, it's not the case with Iran. But I do think there is hope in the future for how we're dealing with foreign policy. You know, there's a lot of doomsday articles about stuff, but I think it can't be as bad as we think. I think the only real bad thing is the climate catastrophe. That's the one we got to worry about.
Right. Well, it's super interesting because I actually think that that specifically leads nicely into what we want to discuss today.
Definitely.
This idea of institution heavy processes and bouncing back and kind of where we are, because we also work from an institution heavy framework.
Yeah.
The Constitution, obviously not a self-executing document, but we have definitely set things up over the last 200 years so that it works basically no matter who's running the government, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of discussion about, you know, nonpartisan employees of government, you know, federal government jobs. That are not politically appointed, they're not politically motivated, they're career people who work there, that sort of chug along in the background regardless of which party is in power. Yeah. So I think it's sort of an interesting, I guess, analog here a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, first thing we're going to talk about is the crisis at the border. Mm-hmm. And I just want to apologize to everyone because I said that when this started about a year ago.
Yeah.
I said that every episode would have something about this until it was resolved. And I honestly, that was optimistic of me, because this is not something that's going to be resolved. And I know that that is very doom and gloom of me, but I think we'll get more into that discussion in a minute. But this is something that's going to be something that we deal with forever. Yeah. And that this one policy decision that was made over a year ago is going to affect immigration policy literally forever. So we'll get into that. And then we're also going to talk about impeachment. And that's sort of where this institution heavy discussion lends itself nicely, and sort of what's going on with that, and how we can better earn our names, our, you know, titles as neoliberal shills. Yeah. So it's going to be fun. Let's just jump right in. Let's start with the crisis at the border. So as of this recording, there, since December of 2018, so about 6 months, there have been 6 child deaths at the border, including a 2.5-year-old toddler. And the most recent was a 16-year-old boy. And any deaths is completely unacceptable. But 6 in as many months is, what's the word I'm looking for, Varsha?
Horrific.
Horrifying?
Yeah, horrifying.
Horrific? Yeah. Stomach turning. I don't know.
Unacceptable.
Pick your poison in terms of that word.
Yeah.
Because it's all of those things and more. And I think also it's worth noting, as of right now, the kind of model for family and children immigration, the model center has been the Rio Grande Center, and that is effectively quarantined right now due to a flu outbreak. So we have to think about that. That's supposed to be like this like guiding light model of how immigration policy is executed throughout the country, but specifically when it comes to these families and children. Yeah. And they're currently dealing with a flu crisis.
Yeah. I think what's really scary about this specific crisis is that it's worse than previous administrations, because yes, we can talk about in previous administrations, the Obama administration, the Bush and the Clinton administration, they all deported immigrants. But this one, the cruelty, like as Adam Serwer says, the cruelty really is the fucking point, because basically for the past 7 or 8 months, right, or even before that, tens of thousands of children a month are traveling, many with a parent, some without parents, are coming from the United States, coming to the United States from Mexico. And instead of, you know, the U.S. Border Patrol just not letting them in, you know, which is cruel in itself, or, you know, pushing them back into Mexico, or Mexico taking custody of them, the U.S. Border Patrol is taking custody of them, and they're spending time in Border Patrol custody, and that is where these 6 kids died, right? Like,
right.
If there was actually a way for this administration to care less, I don't think it could. I think it physically could not care less, because literally there are so many immigrants that the U.S. immigration enforcement system cannot physically care for all of them. And because the Trump administration and Stephen Miller are so cruel, they insist on, you know, detaining all of these people because of some horrific idea that these people are dangerous and they're invading the country. And I understand that there are moderates out there on immigration, and then there are really hardliners or whatever the heck, and they don't want to let in refugees for whatever reason, or they don't want to let in more immigrants. But treating them with this level of disrespect and horrific conditions is just... it's a humanitarian crisis that we are creating, right? And we have done that many, many times in the past. If you look at America's storied past of invading other countries and foreign invasions and foreign interventions, like it's not fucking new, I understand, but this is a whole new level of bananas, right? And
we've taken it to the next. We've taken it to the next level.
As we know, there was like a few weeks ago, I think the Border Patrol apprehended an American vigilante group that was arresting Mexicans of their own fucking accord and detaining them. Right? It's bananas.
I mean, it is absolutely wild what's going on. And what I think is, you know, we've talked about this on the show before, and part of the administration's defense here, insofar that they have one, or care to give one, is that it's a logistical nightmare, which I'll give them. Yeah, it's a fucking logistical nightmare. But again, like, you can't spend a couple $100s on project management software. Mm-hmm. Like you can't figure. And again, I understand that this is a problem of volume, right? In fact, now there, you know, we see the highest levels of children and families immigrating, even as overall levels of immigration have dropped, that proportion is actually higher. So I understand that it is a massive undertaking. Yeah. But that basically means that you need to be flexible and move with the times and figure out the best way to do this, which just no one is doing because nobody fucking cares.
Exactly. That's basically.
And you're not supposed – that's it. Because you're not supposed to detain children for more than 72 hours before releasing them to the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And basically, they're holding these kids for much longer than 72 hours. And basically, their defense against that is, well, there's a lot of kids and we just haven't gotten to them yet. I'm like, unacceptable. Yeah. Unacceptable. Yeah. That is not, you know, and then they're like, oh, well, now because of these medical things, half of the staff is, you know, at hospitals and there's less people to check in on the kids that we do have. I'm like, still unacceptable. We are dealing with children. Yeah. How can you be the party? Well, you know what? Again, I come back to this every single time, but this is also the administration that sat on CHIP renewal, the C stands for children, health insurance for children. And couldn't get this, like, bland bipartisan bill passed, you know, renewed, because, I don't know, they've got their heads so far up their butts, they don't know where, like, their mouths start and their rectums begin.
Exactly. I mean, I think you're exactly right that this crisis would have happened regardless of who was president, right? But if you were seeing, if there was anyone else president, anyone else besides Mike Pence, Stephen Miller, and Donald Trump were president, there would have been bipartisan efforts from Republicans and Democrats, because actually a lot of Republican senators, except Jeff Sessions, do support the DREAM Act, do support certain types of refugee resettlement, and they do support solving an actual fucking humanitarian crisis so it doesn't affect the American economy in the horrific way that it is right now, right? Because right now we're spending so much taxpayer dollars basically creating concentration camps, when it could have been much cheaper and much more efficient and much more humane to accept these refugees or to accept them as undocumented migrants or whatever, and make sure they reach their court dates with the fucking ankle bracelet, right? So I think that's what's really frustrating, is that if there were any other president, specifically a president with a soul, we would have some actual effort by the people behind the bully pulpit in solving this crisis. And I think that's what's really frustrating to me, is that Donald Trump literally could not give two shits about these kids because they are brown, right? And the Republican caucus in the Senate and the House, especially in the House, but definitely in the Senate, also does not care about brown kids. Like, Mitch McConnell, all the fuck he cares about is confirming judges. And that is true of every single other senator, especially Lindsey fucking Graham, who has lost all self-respect, right? And all the House members care about is making Nancy Pelosi look bad. They literally don't want to pass anything. They vote no on every single thing. They're back to their status quo position where they get to vote no on everything back in, you know, since 2010 or since before 2010. So I think that's what's frustrating, is that the institutions that we have, even though they're still technically existing, you know, they still are technically working, they're broken as fuck. And that is because we are currently running a system where there is no empathy for the people who should have empathy. There is no intelligence for the people who should have intelligence. And then there is no, like, cohesion from any party. And I'm not asking for a happy-go-lucky bipartisan solution. I know those don't exist. I know we're crazy polarized. But I do think that if any other person were president right now, we would have found a solution. It may not have been the solution that I wanted, but it would have been a solution other than concentration camps. Okay?
Right. It's just, I mean, there's pictures of children sleeping on the ground. And, you know, outside in a quote holding pen under a bridge. Yeah. We are literally having children sleep on the ground under a bridge. And so for me, that's not even like, you know, let's have a happy-go-lucky partisan, you know, kumbaya moment. That's like, let's get something fucking done.
Exactly.
Like, how can you see that and not, I just don't understand it. And you know, there's a lot there. I remember during the 2018 election cycle, there was a lot of discussion about mothers running, and especially young mothers with young children running for office. And that was a huge part of the women, like the wave of women that chose to run in 2016. And it was marketed correctly as a good thing, right? And but it was marketed in this way that it's like, that means that these people will have, these mothers will have more compassion, will have more compassion for these types of issues specifically, which while might be true, is absolute motherfucking bullshit, right? It's not just mothers that can feel compassion and empathy for children sleeping on the ground outside.
Yeah.
Like, this doesn't, this is not a gender thing. This is not a parent thing. This is not anything except the culmination of a white supremacy patriarchy. Yeah. That we have completely played into, even as recently as the 2016 election, or 2018 elections, yeah. Excuse me. And even that type of discussion that we were having at the time plays directly into this white supremacist patriarchal system that we have so elegantly set up for ourselves. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of like think pieces and hit pieces on like, oh, who has compassion? And the answer should be every fucking person, because holy fucking shit, they're children.
I think what's key is from now until how many ever fucking days until 2020, I don't want to hear likability ever again. You know, shoot me ever in the face again if you say the word likability. Like, just fucking choke me or like kill me, because I cannot hear that again. But I do want to hear empathy. I do want to hear compassion. I do want to hear courage, okay? Because that is what it would take to fix this. Because it's going to take a lot. Because this is not going to go away if Trump loses, right? January, whatever.
Well, that's the problem.
January, whatever, 2021, there is still going to be a large humanitarian crisis, because for 4 years, the Trump administration has done nothing to help the South American countries that are dealing with these issues.
Right.
The Trump administration has done nothing to help Guatemala or even Mexico, right? It's done nothing to stem the flow, to deal with the violence and the stress that is causing this influx of migrants. And so that's not going to go away in 2021. And so it's going to mean that the next Democratic president has to take on the Republican base and Fox News and whatever Republican Congress members are left. Hopefully there's not a lot of them, in order to tell them, yo, you got to do something about this. You can no longer be racist. We have to take a two-pronged approach to this, dealing with our racism at home and actually letting in some refugees and fixing our immigration system and streamlining the process, as well as providing enough aid and providing actual solutions that are not interventions into South America, into South American countries that are struggling, to make sure that these people are not struggling so much so that they are putting a stress on other countries, not just the United States, right? Because this is an issue not just that South America is dealing with. This is also the Syrian refugee crisis is still massive,
right?
And so a president that does not have empathy and courage and compassion is not going to do well in 2021, regardless of what party they're in.
That's the thing. And the Trump administration's solution, their proposed solution to all of this, is basically sticking their fingers in the ears and saying la 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 la. So what the problem is that their whole thing is, well, we need to stop them from coming in. We need to deter them from coming in.
But this isn't deterring
them. We
need
to not make it worth it. Right. Well, so that's the thing, is like, their deterrence doesn't actually work. And we know that because it doesn't work, because we now have the highest numbers of families and children coming ever. So obviously, whatever deterrence bullshit that they've fed themselves is not actually working. So their proposed solution, they tried it. Good for you, sweetie. You tried your hardest and you fucking failed. So now it's time to pick up the pieces and get an actual plan in place. And again, I don't have answers. And that's, I know, very frustrating about talking heads and politicos and, you know, every single person with an asshole in a mouth who, you know, wants to talk about this, is that there's no, and that's the secret, there's no good fucking solution here. There are piecemeal fixes, and it will take a long time to overhaul the underlying problems. Right now, let's use the flu metaphor, since that's really apt in the Rio Grande holding facility. You can deal with the flu symptoms, but you're still going to have the fucking flu. If you don't deal with the underlying problem, which this administration has absolutely no interest in doing, you're still going to have the flu. And they're really just handing this off to the next administration and saying, all right, we, you know, fucking deal with it. I don't know. Because ultimately, there's no movement.
I think that's what really bothers me is that, you know, Kirstjen Nielsen resigned, I think, like, at this point, weeks ago. I think it's been over a month, and nothing has changed. Like, not only do we not have a new department head of Homeland Security, which I don't think any...
It's not funny.
I don't think
it's
any department head would actually do a good job, but she is not being held accountable, right, for her actions, for lying to Congress about this. Neither is anyone else. Like, no one is calling Stephen Miller up to hearings to ask him what his role was in advising the president on this policy. No one is fucking asking. None of the reporters are fucking asking Lindsey Graham, hey, you bastard, you used to support the DREAM Act. What the fuck are you doing supporting this president? He's jailing children. Right. Like, no one is treating this like a fucking crisis. And we started this episode, you know, with you pointing out that we missed a couple episodes of talking about this. And that is our bad. And that is just, and like, representative of how the whole media is dealing with this, where there's like, there's a few outrages here and there, such as the news breaking that a sixth child only recently discovered was died in Border Patrol custody. And because of that, there's huge outrage, and there was outrage right after each single report was released about the other five children. But it's not enough, right? Because this should be as big as the Not My President rallies right after November, right? This should be as big as the Women's March. Right. This should be as big as the fucking Science March or the Tax March. But I don't think correct me if I'm wrong, listeners. I don't think there was an actual single day of like massive action. And I think there were a lot of little days. And I do think there were a couple of days of actual outrage and action. And I do think there was in March, but I don't think it was large enough. And that is because not enough people are treating this like a fucking crisis. And it's not just a crisis in how the Trump administration is dealing with it, but it's a crisis in that we don't realize America itself, its institutions, the way that we talk about immigration, the way we talk about refugees, we are not equipped as a country, and we should be getting together. We should be getting together to actually have these discussions, regardless of who the fuck is president and what the fuck the president is doing.
Yeah, it is really hard because you do, again, we as a country, as a society, have set up this really streamlined white supremacist patriarchy. And it's really easy to just go along with that because that's what we've been doing for so long. And to have these discussions is going to take an honest look in the mirror and the dismantling of your own fucking privilege, which is it's not a big ask, but it's a big task. How's that? And you know, you have to be willing to do it, which this administration is not. It's also difficult because, there hasn't been as much outrage over this, and there's plenty of things to outrage about to go around, right? Like the fucking all we talked about last week.
I'm still angry about that.
We spent 45 minutes. Oh, I could do another 45 minutes. I could do a show on abortion probably every week until the end of time, to be honest. There's so much. And again, I understand burnout. A big part of why we took that unscheduled hiatus, I think, at least for me, like that, just this burnout crashed on me all at the same time. You know, it'd been 2.5 years of living on rage and caffeine and nicotine and pretty much nothing else. And then all of a sudden I was like, I don't even know where
I didn't want to say it because I wanted to seem positive. Like Devin and I text, right? And so I wanted to seem positive. I was like, let's record, right? And then I would actually feel relief when you would be too busy or you said you were too burned out because I was like, I am also dying here. It's not that I don't love it.
I am dying because a slow death.
Right now
I love it.
And I really like that I'm getting angry about this and I'm thinking about these problems and I'm thinking about what I'm going to be looking for when I vote in the next election and the types of candidates that we should be talking about, but more importantly, the types of policies we should be supporting. But it does lead to a lot of burnout. And I do think that's because this crisis, this specifically a refugee crisis, a global refugee crisis, is not going away anytime soon, because not only are the political developments of recent right-wing extremism going to catalyze this type of refugee crisis, but the climate catastrophe is definitely going to increase the number of refugees we have in this world.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's all just getting bigger. And actually, I follow on Twitter and on Instagram a woman mm-hmm. named Erica Hart. And she is a brilliant Black queer activist who really drops some fucking truth bombs on you. If you would like to feel uncomfortable, which you should definitely follow her. She said something interesting about the abortion debate. And I think there's a good analog here. She's like, you know, white women are now all up in arms mm-hmm. about abortion because, you know, Alabama and Illinois and Georgia, because obviously these are disgusting, draconian yeah. laws and they deserve to be rallied against. But, you know, what they were saying was like, look, this is not fucking new. This is not all of a sudden an issue just because now white women mm-hmm. are invested in it. And it's not just yeah. a women's issue. It's not just, you know, it's anyone who can get pregnant. And there's Black trans women are being murdered. That it's not even mm-hmm. a blip on the media landscape when these Black trans women are being murdered. And when, you know, Black women's maternal mortality rates are through the roof. And it took Alabama for white women to get involved, to stand up and be like, whoa, 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 not so good, not so good. Because again, we set up this white mm-hmm. supremacist patriarchy. I swear to God, it's gonna be the title of this fucking episode. And so all of these issues from abortion, which is, again, not a women's issue, it's an everyone issue, and not only women get pregnant, so let's also keep that in mind, to immigration, to climate change, these are all things there. All of a sudden, people are, like, so fucking interested because it's now affecting their lives. This is not new, and this is not going to just stop once we're done being outraged, once the rage and adrenaline leave our systems. This is been going on, this will continue to go on, and it is always, you know, people of color who will suffer the most. And that's obvious in the immigration debate, in the climate change debate, in how we set up the system. Definitely. And so, you know, I understand, you know, there's a lot to get lost in here, right? There's a lot of things. Which is why, you know, everyone, you talk to anyone who deals with politics on a regular basis, activists and, you know, like yahoos like us who, you know, you know, play journalists on TV. You always say, like, pick an issue or two or maybe three that you really follow and that you really follow up with and that you really understand. Because it is impossible to take them all on. And no one is asking you to, but also like have a broader understanding of how your two issues fit into all these other fucking issues and why you picked those two issues. You know, we talk about kids at the border, which is, you know, a humanitarian crisis, but it fits into a larger narrative that we're not talking about. And it's just, this is going to be going on for a long time. And even if we have, even when a Democrat is elected in 2020, this is going to be a problem. And there is not going to be a solution that we like. Even if it's my preferred candidate who wins, I'm not going to like this. This is not going to just go away and be easy.
You know, it's going to be
hard.
And hopefully it's like racist Republicans, but maybe it's like certain Democrats, or maybe it's certain politicians, or maybe there's political consequences to making the right decision. Or maybe Democrats are cowards and they make the wrong decision in 2021 when they're trying to fix this. But it's going to be a hard pill to swallow either way. Something is going to go wrong. Because as we've seen for, at this point I've been alive almost 25 years, something always goes wrong. You know, a lot of good things go, like a lot of good things happen. A lot of things go right. But when it comes to politics, as we have seen, shit goes wrong. Okay?
Yeah, it goes wrong before it goes right. And then it goes wrong again. And then... you know, and then you realize you're not even thinking about the whole issue. You're just thinking about this one little tiny slice, how it affects your white privileged ass. And then you're like, oh, wait, that's not even the right solution. And then you start all over again in perpetuity.
Remember,
forever.
Have you watched The Good Place?
Yes, I'm not all caught up on this season, though.
Okay, but do you know what Jeremy Baramee is?
Yes!
Okay, so basically, you know, Jeremy Baramy, like where we are is in the dot, right? But like progress isn't a line. It's not a straight line where it goes from point A to point B, like from one end of time to other. It's like fucking Jeremy Baramy, okay?
Baramy.
And
yeah, if you're not a Good Place fan, it basically just means that time is nonlinear and totally fucked up.
And it's totally fucked up. And I'm not saying there could be alternate universes. Maybe there are, but forget that. Right now in this universe, it takes a lot to get from point A to point B. It is not a straight line. It is a winding fucking path. And there's a lot of steps backward. And the past 4 years have been a long time coming. Okay, I was talking about this morning because the Indian elections just happened. And guess what?
Right.
A right-wing extremist won the election. He won re-election. Yeah. Okay?
Right.
We've had 5 years of this asshole in India, and he won it again. So it's going to take a while. But this one issue, the kids at the border, the 6 children that have died, is just really representative of the fact that there are larger things at play that we have to be watchful of, and we have to make sure our institutions can actually handle, and also that we are vigilant enough that we are paying attention to this issue when Donald Trump is no longer president, because it is still going to be an issue. Because as we know, President Obama still detained children for a certain period of time. It was just the 72 hours, but he still did it, right?
Right.
As we know, President Obama deported millions of people. As we know, like, neither Bush, Clinton, or Obama were able to get an immigration bill passed that any Democrat today would be supportive of. So it's still going to be a fucking problem, especially because of other stuff.
And I think if we learn anything from this moment is that, we got to keep our eyes on it, even if we like who's in charge.
Yep.
Because it's always going to be thrumming in the background.
Yeah.
And I think this actually leads nicely into the next thing that we're going to talk about, which is impeachment. And, you know, it's so funny because we've been talking about impeachment since January, whatever, 2017.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of like kind of like breath held, like, how is this going to go down? Are we going to be able to impeach? Is this asshole going to have a whole term? Is he going to have 1 year? And then Mueller, you know, the Mueller report, and oh my God, is this it? Is this the moment?
Yeah.
And then all hell broke loose. And then, you know, when we were like, oh, well, this is hell now. We thought we were in hell before, but this is really hell. And then you realize it's not because more hell breaks loose. It's a whole thing, right? It's a whole fucking thing that is just splayed across everywhere from Fox News to Rachel Maddow. It's just one big smear of shit.
Yep.
And the thing is that impeachment in and of itself is kind of an odd duck when it comes to our political system, our justice system, and our criminal system.
Yeah.
So we talk about the justice system broadly. We talk about criminal justice. We talk about, you know, political justice and corruption that usually fits neatly within the criminal justice system. So if you're a politician and you do something politically corrupt, you are prosecuted within the justice system, the criminal justice system of our country, right? Does that make sense? So there's a lot of intersect and overlap between political crimes and just general regular crimes, right? Impeachment is this weird fucking uncle who like hangs out at like family Christmas parties, but you don't really know why they're there.
Yeah, like,
because it's neither it's not a criminal process, and it is a political process, but it feels like a criminal process.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's only been used twice.
Yeah.
And because the Constitution is not a self-executing document, it is not something that just spells out everything. It's supposed to be kind of like, make shit up as you go. We haven't really like defined making this shit up as we go. So impeachment is almost conceptually more complicated than the word, if that makes sense.
Okay, so basically all of this hullabaloo is because, okay, first things first is the Mueller report came out, right? And a lot of people were disappointed. And a lot more people were like, why are you disappointed? This dude, Mueller, literally just said, I cannot confirm or deny if the president obstructed justice. Here is evidence for both. I leave it up to Congress. Here you go. And then he like peaced out. Okay? That is a big fucking deal when a career prosecutor, a dude who was so good at his job, they insisted he keep his job for longer, which is very not cool for the FBI director to do, right? Like, this right. dude.
Remember Hoover, anyone?
Yeah, this dude is, like, so scary, like, nobody can fucking scare him. Like, this dude could not figure out for the life of him whether or not Donald Trump obstructed justice, but had evidence for one or the other, which means he is so straight-laced, he didn't want to make the choice himself, and he basically begged Congress to take it on. Because it's not as if he's telling Congress, yes, I think you should impeach. He's saying, it is your duty to investigate this further. Even though he didn't say it right. as much in those words, I get that he couldn't say that, or he right. didn't think he had to say it, but that is what he's saying. And so this hullabaloo began because Nancy Pelosi, I love her, I still do, through all of this, even though I slightly disagree with her argument. Her argument basically appears to be that we don't need an impeachment inquiry because Democrats can investigate through other things without resorting to impeachment. And the impeachment only risks increasing support for Donald Trump because the country is heading to another presidential election, and Donald Trump, like maybe Bill Clinton, can use the impeachment inquiry to get reelected, right? And Bill Clinton didn't use it to get reelected. He was impeached and not convicted in his second term, but his popularity among Democrats
just skyrocketed, shot
right? And so I understand.
And this was also – and that impeachment process too, I just want to take a quick second because we were talking about Mueller. Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt. But I do want to say that what the Republicans had when they impeached Bill Clinton was Ken Starr, who not only was completely transparent with his findings from the second he had them. Like, Ken Starr completed his investigation. He was a special prosecutor assigned to the Clinton case, which started with a land deal. And Whitewater, right? And just completely transformed into this, like, sexual misconduct lying thing. So it changed completely. Yep. And as soon as that report was finished, Ken Starr's office went and dropped off copies to everyone they could think
exactly.
of. It was one of the first things that ever went up online to disseminate to the public. I mean, like, people, you know, they published it as little, like, booklets. Yeah. Like, they literally published it.
Like, the fucking Little Red Book from Mao. Like, it literally was, it was people's Bible. And there are copies of the Mueller report, but they're heavily redacted, right? And they're still redacted. Like, and I think what's...
So I will say that when you look at that, I mean, like, we're not working with a Ken Starr here, right? We're not working with, I'm not going to say concerted effort, because I'm not a conspiracy theorist, wink, wink. But, like, obviously we're working with a lot less juice than Ken Starr and the Republicans were back when Clinton was
Exactly.
So I just wanted to point that out.
Because, so basically, right, so this report comes out, you know, Pelosi basically says, hey, this will increase support for Donald Trump through under maybe by Republicans, maybe some independents, right, because we're approaching election. We got to strike at the right time. So that is totally reasonable argument. I understand that she thinks she's being strategic. And who am I, someone who is not actually a politico, who has no experience in political strategy, like has only been watching this for like 7 years at this point, as she can remember, or maybe 8 years is how much I can remember. So I'm not an expert. So I am not going to question what she thinks is her strategy, right? But I am going to say, as a voter, as someone who is a recent citizen, as someone who is from California, right near her district, I think the fundamental argument for impeachment in the House, not conviction in the Senate, but impeachment in the House is about doing your duty to make sure the executive branch or the judicial branch or whoever you're impeaching, if you're impeaching a cabinet member, is upholding the oath to the Constitution that they took when they didn't serve. Right.
No, I was just saying, this is where we don't really understand how impeachment works, because we don't do it that often. And we don't really get it. And we don't really understand what it's the function of it is. Because, what's the difference between an impeachment inquiry and a regular oversight inquiry? Yeah. Like, logistically, there's probably not a lot of difference logistically.
Yeah, they still do the same investigation. Yeah.
Exactly. In terms of, like, the documents they can subpoena, the testimony they can hear. Logistically, it's probably, like, you know, tomato, tomato. Who gives a fuck? But, yeah, I mean, I always liken this to our roads in this country. Everywhere in this country, the roads, freeways, places where you're going 90 miles an hour in the middle of Michigan. I was just in Michigan, so. Basically, all of that is regulated with painted lines. There's no physical barrier. Mm-hmm. We've all agreed that these painted lines mean enough that we are not going to cross them recklessly. It's kind of a mind fuck if you think about it. We've gotten everyone in the country to agree to follow painted lines on roads to keep people in line going 90 miles an hour. Yeah. That is, like, can you name one other thing or system that literally has no physical barriers, that has no anything? It's just a for lack of a better term, a gentleman's agreement that we all follow the painted lines on the ground. And so that's sort of the idea here, though, right? With this institution heavy, kind of linking it back to what we were talking about at the top of the show, it's institution heavy, which basically means we've all agreed to follow the painted lines on the road. And if you don't, I mean, obviously there's like traffic and you get tickets and all of that, but that's all been developed over time, right? When they first painted lines on the road, I'm sure it was anarchy and there was no tickets and people rammed into each other and,
it took some time. I mean, I think I haven't actually read a history book on this, but there are books on this. But like, yeah, it took some time for people to understand the laws, traffic laws especially, right? And I think it's the same with impeachment, with the same with oversight, exactly. Right? So when oversight began in the fucking 1800s, late 18th century, they are basically just doing the basic aspects of Congress, which is dealing with the money and making sure you're not declaring war and dealing with the trade, right? And so I'm not an expert on the Founding Fathers, but I'm assuming the Founding Fathers didn't intend to have impeachment hearings in the year 1990, whatever the fuck, about a president who did make, you know, a fucking human resources mistake of huge proportions and did abuse his power, about like impeached over lying about whether or not he cheated on his wife, right? Because that is fundamentally what he was impeached over, was obstructing justice and lying under oath, right? And I'm just to be clear as an aside, I'm not defending his conduct with Monica Lewinsky. As we know from 2019 and Me Too, it actually was a huge abuse of power, but
no, it was disgusting.
Yeah, it was disgusting. But I don't know if
that's why RICO charges work. You get mobsters on tax evasion. Yeah. You never get them for the crime. You get them for like something like kind of like sexy on the side, right? Like that's what they go down for.
We literally tried to impeach Bill Clinton over lying about an affair instead of some fake scandal in Whitewater, which wasn't really a scandal, right? I think that's the point. And I think if I could go back in time, I would try to convince Bill Clinton to resign before the impeachment ever began, because I think he committed an abuse of power that was disgusting.
I'm sure there are plenty of people who said the same thing to him, and because he's Bill Clinton, he's probably like, fuck you, I'm amazing, because men always think they're amazing, and they think their dicks are amazing.
And that's basically, if I could say the nicest things about Newt Gingrich, which I can't, let's assume that Newt Gingrich was acting in total good faith, right? In the 1990s, and he's impeaching Bill Clinton for lying to the lying, and not upholding the Constitution. If we assume that, as we should, as Republicans want us to, because they still hate Bill Clinton, and that is the same reason you should impeach Donald Trump, because he lied and did not uphold the Constitution for many different things. Not only did he cover up an affair by paying off someone, writing a check that he wasn't supposed to and made violated campaign finance laws. He also lied about whether or not he told Don Jr. to release a statement in a certain way about that July meeting. He also lied about...
Yeah, it's kind of like take your pick of lies here. Like, if we're going to impeach over lying, take your fucking pick, right? We got lots to choose from. So, but again, to go back to this, like, painted line. So, democratic norms, which we've been talking about, again, since the beginning of the show, since the beginning of this administration, it's really the difference between codifying these democratic norms into laws that are breakable, or if they're just norms, and you break them and there's no real consequence, maybe it's not like, it's not a good thing, right? It's unethical, it's shitty, it's disgusting, but you didn't actually break the law, right? And this is where impeachment gets a little bit weird, uncle-y, because it's not like...
High crimes and misdemeanors have not been defined, okay? So that's why if you can justify, if you're a Republican today or even a centrist Democrat or whatever the heck, right? You can justify impeaching Bill Clinton, which maybe you can. You can justify impeaching Richard Nixon, which we probably can. You can justify impeaching Andrew Johnson because you definitely can. You can justify impeaching Donald Trump, not because it's a political inquiry, but because there are some fundamental legal things that he has done under the law that are definitely fucking misdemeanors, okay? And Fundamentally, he has violated his oath to the Constitution, not just with the kids at the border, but his lies about healthcare, the way that he talks, his racism, like the way that he treats his citizens, the way that he thinks about citizens, the way that he thinks about candidates, the violence he incites against the press, even if you disagree with that word. Like, he has fundamentally violated his oath to the Constitution. He is not faithfully executing the office of the president. He is not preserving, protecting, or defending the Constitution in anything that he does. He literally likes it. Like, just recently, I saw a story where the HUD administration, Department of Housing and Urban Development, is no longer going to find an easier way to deny trans people entry into homeless shelters. Why the fuck does he care about that? He's so cruel that it's not just the trans military ban. On so many different levels, they're also finding ways gay couples whose kids are not born in the U.S., who are naturalized through the way that I became citizens, they are maybe going to lose, like, their kids are maybe not going to be citizens because those couples cannot prove that their kids were born in the U.S. and they didn't conceive them in the U.S., right? Because they're gay.
Right.
So, like, there are so many things that prove that Donald Trump doesn't give a flying fuck about the Constitution. So I understand that Pelosi, Speaker Pelosi has a certain way of thinking about the strategy, and she wants to strike at a certain time, and maybe she has a time in mind. Maybe she does believe the investigations are going to go forward. But I think, as a citizen, I think she should just do a better job of indicating that she still is for investigating the president. And I think she is. I think she's like – the way that people are reporting on her is that she just wants to stop impeachment at all costs. And that could be true. But I also do think it's true.
It's probably not. We know this from how people love to hate on Pelosi. It's probably not true. And I mean, part of impeachment, you know, a lot of the arguments that I've read is exactly what you said, Varsha, is it's not even about whether or not you can prove it or whether or not he gets convicted in the Senate. It's saying this matters. Him not faithfully executing the Constitution, which is his whole goddamn motherfucking job, him not doing that is not something we're just going to take lightly. Yeah. It's not something we're just going to, like, you know, la-da-da, whatever. This is fucking serious. And even if you don't get actually impeached, we're going to start this inquiry because fuck you, this matters. And I'm there. I'm there with everyone. So for me, because I'm a neoliberal shill, and I think that Nancy Pelosi is smarter than almost everyone else on this planet. Yep. And she also lived, you know, she was in Congress for the Clinton impeachment. She was alive for the Nixon impeachment, obviously, you know. And I just think that we really and Maxine Waters came out in support of Nancy Pelosi and not rushing to impeachment. And Maxine Waters was the first person to go on MSNBC and be like, impeach that motherfucker. No. Like, she literally said that in no uncertain terms. And if she's saying, wait, maybe there's not now. I don't know. Neoliberal shill here. So
it wasn't just Maxine Waters. It was also like Ro Khanna. Ro Khanna is one of the most progressive members of Congress. And I don't always agree with him, but he is really progressive and he has historically not supported Pelosi. He also defended Pelosi, right? So I think, and again, I'm not trying to convince you of some conspiracy theory here or anyone.
No.
I'm just saying that Nancy Pelosi has been at this longer. And even if you think that she alone controls, like, everything in the fucking world, the Democratic caucus.
Yeah, she does.
Even if you think that she is against impeachment, there is no way she can hold back every single member of Congress, Democratic member of Congress, for supporting impeachment or supporting more investigations. Because the thing is, there are various oversight chairs. They are in charge of their own oversight, right? And she cannot control, like, she can't physically hold them back. No one is going to be holding back Maxine Waters from investigating the way that Steve Mnuchin does his fucking job, because they are still.
I would love to see someone try, though. That would be fun.
And so all I'm saying is, I'm not asking you to have faith in Pelosi at all. I am asking you, as a citizen, to take it by the fucking reins and, you know, call your fucking congressperson, right? So, like, right now, if you feel helpless because Pelosi is not saying the stuff that you want her to say, you think, I don't know, you think she's a coward, you can do her job better, whatever the fuck, whatever you think, even if you think it's totally reasonable things, what you can do, instead of just complaining on Twitter about it or listening to me maybe complain about it or whatever the heck, right? call your congressperson and say, hey, I would like you to open an investigation into Donald Trump and how he lied about jailing kids up at the border. I would like you to open up an investigation right. about how Donald Trump is a fucking racist and lied about fine people right. on both sides and the aftermath of Charlottesville right. And domestic terrorism and fighting domestic terrorism. I would like you to open up another hearing on how the housing administration, like the housing department is literally screwing over trans people. I would like you to open an investigation on the Department of Homeland Security and how they're building fucking concentration camps. Right. I would like you to open right. up an investigation into the Office of Refugee Resettlement and how one of your people in there is tracking migrants' periods to prevent them from having abortions. OK, so right. I understand that at certain times we can be frustrated with Democratic leadership because I fucking hate Chuck Schumer. Still do. You know, like I think not he's useless. Like, I understand that some people will defend him, whatever. But
that's great. He's useless.
And I am not 100% defending Pelosi here. I still like her. I still think she is an amazing strategist and legislator. And I'm saying openly to people, I disagree with her strategy here. But I think the way to fix that strategy, to do what, you know, we think is better, is to convince her that this is an opportune right. moment to open up impeachment. Basically, right now, yeah. the only thing that's holding her back is that she doesn't think it's opportune. She has another strategy right. in mind. And you, as right. the voters, Democratic, independent, whatever, you see, because like his approval rating is in the fucking 30s, you see that you want Donald Trump impeached. So you have to make some right. noise. Okay. So we talked about this with right. kids at the border. We've talked about this with abortion. We talked about this with climate change, with the trans military ban, with the Women's March. Every single thing, you insisted on making noise, especially with the healthcare debates, right? So if you think right. Donald Trump is not executing his oath to the Constitution, you have to make some noise, because democracy is not a spectator sport. It's a contact sport.
It's not a spectator sport. Oh my God. If you have a feeling, actually, I don't care about your feelings, but if you want to say something, it is well within your rights and your duty to do so. And yeah, and the other thing is it. Like, yeah, I think it's also important for me to point out that I think that impeachment, opening impeachment proceedings, is extremely important for the reasons that I laid out, that like, look, this is serious fucking business. Whether or not you're actually impeached, like, you can't do yeah. that, right? You can, but there's going to be consequences. This is the idea of consequences here. This is where, once again, Congress has to step in and be a parent to Donald Trump and say, no, you can't have everything yeah. you want. What my position is, you know, from everything I understand, everything I've read, and the faith that I have in my elected leaders, you know, including Nancy Pelosi, is I'm willing to give her some time and the benefit of the yep. doubt, which I think is, you know, especially because, you know, she had a whole bunch of like white bread men try to like take her seat and come for her, like whatever. I realize that's not popular and that's not what people want to do, but just also, I guess I'm having a hard time like connecting this, but impeachment is this kind of squishy, fuzzy, weird uncle thing.
Yeah.
We don't exactly know how it works, and rushing into it is just going to make a bigger mess. I'm not saying we shouldn't yeah. do it. I'm saying, you know, and again, I don't know exactly where this fits. And you know, I was taking notes for this, yeah. I was taking notes for this episode. And one thing I did write down is, Republicans have always had long game, and they've always been ruthless yeah. as a party. And I think maybe, you know, the old adage, Republicans fall in line and Democrats fall in love, I think can sort of apply here. I'm not saying that, you know, we need to engage in good faith. But I'm also saying, like, let's try maybe a little bit of long game and a little bit of ruthlessness, right? And take it for and take the long view for like 5 hot seconds. And I'm not saying that that means we're going to go the long view way, but maybe just like, let's look at it, like take it to dinner, see if maybe long game would work for us in the long run. Because what we've been doing, unfortunately, Republicans are not engaging in good faith. And for us to continue to engage in good faith with them makes no fucking sense.
And I understand that certain Democrats or certain people, voters, whatever, are like, it's been 5 fucking months. We voted for a referendum on Trump and we expect you to deliver. And I get that. But I was talking to someone recently and they made a really good point. And the really good point was some Democrats in Congress have overlearned a lesson from 2016 and 2018. The lesson they got from 2016 is Hillary ran this campaign about how Donald Trump is this horrible man and, you know, how embarrassed would you be if he got elected? And she ended up losing in the Electoral College. And then in 2018, Democrats just ran on healthcare and let's fucking stop dropping taxes on rich people. But mainly it was just healthcare. Right. Let's give you your fucking healthcare. We will protect your healthcare. That is what they ran on. Right. And they ended up winning in the House. But see what that theory – and so basically now Democrats are too scared to make 2020 about Donald Trump and his crimes, right? I understand that theory. Right. I respect it. Maybe some Democrats in the House really do believe that and some in the Senate do believe that too. But I also think – That theory discounts the fact that, yes, Hillary Clinton lost the Electoral College, but she only lost the fucking election by 80,000 votes. She still had a 3 million majority, right. Okay? So something right. went okay. I understand she didn't win the election, right. And no one is defending her.
Oh, you're right.
But no, it but was right. literally less than 100,000 votes, okay? And then on top right. of that, in 2018, yeah, we won the House, but we lost the Senate, okay? We lost more seats in the Senate. Yeah. And I understand that was like – the luck of the draw of the map, but it also was the fact that the message didn't work in a few states because Claire McCaskill lost, and Claire McCaskill was not talking about impeaching Trump. She was talking about healthcare,
right?
So I think that's basically what I understand. And I read this great article from Rebecca Tracer today where she basically said the point of it is that can we just keep our convictions for 2 seconds? It was about 2020. And basically the point mm-hmm. of it was, can we keep our convictions for 2 seconds? Because none of you, no one in the fucking world, because Professor Trelawney doesn't exist, knows what will happen in 2020, okay? And because no right. one knows right. what will fucking happen, let's just stick to our fucking convictions, okay? Let's
right.
yeah,
try it.
Let's walk
way.
With our heads up. And so for some people, like Speaker Pelosi, that means being more strategic and thinking it out and maybe mm-hmm. being frustrated with how impeachment could blow back on her party. And for some people, that's, mm-hmm. no, fuck it. This guy is locking kids up in cages. And I get it. I get both sides. Right. That's what I'm saying about – we talk about this with the refugee crisis. There are no easy solutions to this because I think right. the fundamental thing about Speaker Pelosi and leadership in Congress is that her job is not to make you feel fuzzy about the Democratic Party. Like, I get that you want her to be right. the spokesperson, but sadly, she's not the spokesperson. She does her job best when there is a Barack Obama or a Democratic president behind the Oval Office, right. and she is passing legislation and fucking
– and making the, and hard, making the decisions. Hard decisions.
Her job is to make sure that no matter what, come midterm elections or come the, you know, the next election, she keeps Democrats in power. That is her only job. Exactly. Okay. And I made this, I had this right. thread a couple of weeks ago where this was sort of insulting to Pelosi, but I basically said, Pelosi is our Mitch McConnell. Okay. She is ideological.
Right.
Unlike Mitch McConnell, she has ideas. She has a perspective. She has things that she has convictions, right? But fundamentally,
yeah. But she also has a fucking job.
Yeah. And her job is to make sure that we keep the fucking majority in 2020. And from her years right. of experience, something is telling her, right. hey, we shouldn't fucking pull the trigger yet. I'm not asking you to trust right. her instinct on that because maybe you disagree. But I am asking you to take right. action on your own if you disagree instead of just complaining about yes. her. Because complaining about her exactly. isn't going to fix her. Isn't going to fix it.
It also plays right into the Republican strategy. They want you to hate her. They yes, want a fractured exactly. they want to continue this fractured Democratic Party narrative because it works. Because then we get assholes who vote third mm-hmm. party in fucking presidential
yeah, and so
elections.
Instead of saying that she is the reason that you don't vote or she is like the reason for all of your problems, stop focusing on her. Focus on the issue that you care yeah. about. And for some reason, I don't know what it was, maybe God spoke to you, you had a calling. The issue you care about is holding the president accountable to his actions. And the issue that somebody else cares about is making sure the president is held accountable for putting kids in fucking baby jails, okay? Either way, right. the end result is call your congressperson and have them open up an investigation. And I think exactly. if you get enough congresspeople being called by their constituents, angry constituents yelling at them to open up investigations, eventually that news trickles up to Democratic leadership. like Nancy Pelosi, and she goes, oh, I can't hold this dam back any longer. I have to let it go. And I brought it back to dams.
Right. And we went back to dams. Hell yes.
Like, at some point, the dam is going to break. And it's important that you, as a citizen, you have to make it break. The water right now is just stagnant. And Nancy Pelosi thinks because it's stagnant, oh, it's not going to break. The concrete is stable. It's fine. I can treat 2020. That's okay. That's the thing. That's where I'm bringing this back. Okay. Nancy Pelosi wants to treat 2020 like a normal election, like it's 2012 again. Right. She wants to treat Donald Trump like Mitt Romney and the next Democratic candidate is Barack Obama, right? That's what she thinks. And I disagree with that. I love Pelosi. I like her strategy. I like how talented she is, how smart she is. But I disagree with the fact that we can treat this election like a normal election because Donald Trump has destroyed so much, right?
Yeah, it's not how this works
exactly
anymore.
And so because of that, you have to fucking make the dam break or people will just decide, oh, this can be a normal election. And then come January 2021, if a Democrat wins, oh, we'll just forget all the kids that were jailed. We won't deal with this national refugee crisis. We will forget we were arguing over the Green New Deal. We will forget that we were dealing with gerrymandering and voting rights, right? So you have to stay angry. And I think that's what...
And I know that's hard. It's so, especially when you win. It's hard to stay angry when you win because it feels good. But, you know, and the other thing I think is important to take away from this is, like I said before, I have no answers. This is why I'm not a politician. And instead, I'm an asshole who plays a journalist on this podcast. But what I will say is that even if you disagree with Pelosi, like you do, like I do, I'm sort of middling about
it. I am.
Because I get what she's saying, and not just from a this is a business as usual type of election, but more just like we're really close to this election, and impeachment has this funny way of making the other person more likable.
Yeah, in some cases,
so like making the impeached in some cases, and I'm not saying that will happen, but that could happen.
Yep.
But what I will say is that doesn't mean you have to hate Pelosi. That doesn't mean you have to trash the Democratic Party because what you want personally, your poor baby little feelings are hurt. And so you want to shit all over Pelosi and all of the progress we've made and how hard we're working. That I think is my biggest issue with the impeachment issue.
Yeah.
Because there is no good answer. Mm-hmm. Whatever decision is made is not going to make everyone happy and it's not going to go well. I'm not saying that it won't work. I'm saying it's going to be a shit show. It's always a shit show. So that's fine. Shit shows are part of this, but we don't have to make this so we don't have to fracture over this. Just because you want something personally, like you said, Varsha, you want something personally, call your representatives, make some noise, break that dam. But do not for 1 second think that what you want fucking matters. And I'm not, and again, it's hard. Representative politics is about representing the people in your district. It's about taking it the temperature and figuring out how best to serve and represent them. And that's exactly what it is. And that's true. But that doesn't mean you get everything you want.
Basically, that means that if you want what you personally think should be policy to actually be policy, you have to fight for it. That's what, that's why we're not like, people like who are pedants like to make this point that we're not actually a direct democracy, we're a representative democracy, and that's what that means. That means you have to fight for your representative to fucking represent you. And right now, a lot of people in San Francisco in Pelosi's district feel that Pelosi's not representing them. They, which I hope they will do, are going to call her tomorrow and tell her, hey, you know what? You should open up an impeachment inquiry.
This isn't working. Right. And that's the thing, though. Like, if you want something, not to go into a cliche here, though I always say I hate cliches, but I actually kind of love them and I say them all the time. But if you want something fucking done, you better do it yourself. If you're not willing to put in the work, if you're just going to sit there and bitch about it and you're not willing to put the work in, I don't give a fuck what you want. You know, like we're all a little on edge. It's been 2.5 years. Everyone's a little fucking tired here. Don't give me that middle of the road bullshit unless you are going
and
to
back
fight.
To impeachment for a second. Let's say you convince the House to open the impeachment inquiry. There are two theories. One is the Pelosi theory where this could boost Donald Trump's support because the Republicans in the Senate and Chief Justice Roberts will be so hackish that they will find a way to gain support for Trump. Yeah, sure, that could happen. But yeah. Also, you know, another thing that could happen is the House investigation before they actually vote on impeachment is so robust that Democrat that something else comes out. And that, more importantly, Chief Justice Roberts, even though he is a hack, even though he sucks ass, he at least has to find a respectable way to make sure Democrats who are in the minority in the Senate have a chance of legitimately dealing with this trial, right? So I think
it's gonna be a crapshoot either way.
Okay, there are going to be like party favors sold in the streets of DC if this happens. People are going to like skip work and sit in bars all day watching this. People are gonna be live streaming this. No one is gonna come into work. And if you want that, you gotta fight for it. Because I'm not gonna lie, I sort of want it. I sort of do. Not even for the conviction.
Oh, I would love. I think, again, going back to what I said before, me personally, I think that we have to open an impeachment inquiry because we have to say whether or not you get convicted. Again, this goes back to courage. This goes back to like, yeah, maybe it won't work, but like, can you sleep at night if you didn't try? And I'm not saying it has to happen right now. That's where I'm middling a little bit, where I'm like, I'm willing to give Nancy Pelosi, whom I think is way smarter than I am and has done this before. And so if she needs a little bit more time or she thinks it's not the moment, okay, fine. But I do believe that we, as a people, as a democracy, we need to say no. No
fucking
way.
And think of all the
way.
Cameos in the House investigation if there is impeachment. Sally Yates is going to come back. So Mike Flynn is going to come back. James Comey, I hate that guy, but he's going to come back. Like, it's going to be wild. And so
it's going to be a fucking ride.
But yeah, if you fucking want it, you have to fight for it. And I'm not saying this because, like, I want to defend Pelosi. I'm just saying that fundamentally right now, Speaker Pelosi has all of the power over her Democratic caucus members, right? And she is trying to hold the dam steady because a lot of her caucus members want to impeach. They want to open the inquiry and they want to investigate that way. They don't want to do separate investigations and then open impeachment, right? And a lot of America wants to impeach. But fundamentally, because she has the control right now, because it's her job to have the control, that's how she works, you have to wrest it away from her. You have to convince her. And I understand that's tough because she's the one with the power and it seems unfair. And it is a little unfair, but you have to fight for what you actually believe in or it's not going to happen. Okay? Because ACA, the American, like, the Affordable Care Act would have been repealed if not for the thousands upon thousands of people who went out to these town halls and screamed and screamed and screamed. Okay, like it would have been repealed again. This tax bill would have been so much worse. Like, as a grad student, the only reason this tax bill isn't fucking me over as much as it possibly could is because a lot of grad students and a lot of universities fucking called their Republican Congress members and said, hey, you can't take tuition remission. You can't put that in the bill. You can't make that taxable, or you will literally be putting thousands of people, of grad students, who are more, like, there are more grad students in this country than coal miners. You're going to be putting them, like, on unemployment, basically, right? So you have to fight for it, or it's not going to happen. And there are people who fight for Medicare for All and the Green New Deal who tell you this every single day, and it's the same thing for impeachment, okay? And I understand that it sucks because you think Pelosi is, like, playing a game here. And, you know, if you want to think that, that's fine. And you can share that opinion. You can yell about her all you want. But you have to fundamentally understand her job is just to keep Democrats in power. And so she's doing what she thinks to keep Democrats in power. And you can disagree with that. Job. And that is 100% your right to do. But the action that you take is – you don't just tweet about it. You also call your representative and your senator and tell them to get the fuck going.
Exactly. And you know what? I feel like as angry as I get, I mean, part of why I love doing this show is that ultimately I find that, at least in my opinion, Barsha, by the end of these shows, we are pretty optimistic.
I know. I'm a lot more optimistic now.
I believe. Well, that's the other thing. Like, I believe in people. And I know that's so naive. And I know that's such like a privileged thing to say, but like I believe in people and I believe in this, and I think that Donald Trump is a disgusting sort of you know what, I think we've all heard the words I used for Donald Trump before, and I think all of those things and more, but I still believe, because if you don't, why are we doing this? If you don't believe, if you're so far past this idea that we can get better, then why do you care? Right?
Yeah.
Go full nihilist for me here. You know, like really like Waiting for Godot this shit. Like, just check out.
Yeah.
That's fine. But before we go, I just want to say our action item for this week. There is one. Well, there's two. There's, like Varsha was saying earlier, call your goddamn representatives. Even if it's just like talk to their staff and be like, hi, I'm the asshole who keeps calling you. Like, how's your wife? How are your kids?
Will you tell the congressperson to open an impeachment inquiry? Like, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, do you get the muffins? I don't know. Whatever. My representative is Brad Sherman, who co-signed the first impeachment bill. So I think he knows. Yeah.
Mine is Barbara Lee. She knows what's up.
Yeah, she knows. Like, I mean, I'm going to call him. I call his office all the time. I call the office all the time. I leave a lot of messages. Anyway, the other big one, and this is really important, I feel like everyone really needs to do this, is donate to Racist Texas. They are on the ground in Texas helping migrant families and children. And we used to make this our action item every single week, and it's really important. But they are doing great work, and it's a way to give directly to the fight on the ground, the support system that's there helping these families and children navigate this system, navigate this completely logistically fucked thing that we're doing, you know. And so you can go to racisttexas.org. That's RAICES texas.org to donate. Please give what you can. So, all right, Varsha, I think that's it for us.
I do feel optimistic, you know? Yeah.
I feel good. I always feel good after talking to you. And I know that you're in D.C., which is super exciting. And it also means that you're 3 hours ahead of me, which means it's ass o'clock there now. So, Hellions, thank you so much for being patient with us, for listening with us to the end, for giving us feedback, for just being the best community in the world. I'm just going to say it. I've decided right
now. And I also, I want to add, it's not an action item, but it's like a fun little tidbit because I've just watched this episode and I cried. So do you watch Fleabag?
No, I don't.
Okay, you got to go on Amazon fucking Prime and watch Fleabag season one, and then make sure to get to season two, because there's this quote. She starts with, women are born with pain built in. It's our physical destiny. Period pains, sore boobs, childbirth. We carry it within ourselves. Men don't. Men have to seek it out. They invent these gods and demons so they can feel guilty about things, which is something we as women can do very well on our own. And then they create wars so they can feel things and touch each other when there aren't any wars, and they can play rugby. And we have it all going on in here and outside. We have pain on a cycle for years and years and years and years. And then just when you feel like you're making peace with it all, what happens? The menopause comes. The fucking menopause comes. And it's the most wonderful fucking thing in the world. And yes, your entire pelvic floor crumbles and you get fucking hot and no one cares. But then you're free. No longer a slave. No longer a machine with parts. You're just a person. I just wanted to read that quote just because I was thinking about abortion when I was watching this show. Because one of the characters has an issue with it. And so, whoa. People really should love donate to Racist, because not only are they helping reunite families, they're also probably helping people who are migrant teenagers deal with their abortions or deal with not getting abortions or whatever the issue is, you know, because there are still cases across the country of U.S. citizens of pregnant mothers dying in custody. Okay? It happens. So,
Yeah, this is a very multi-layered issue. So, again, thank you so much for sticking with us. Donate to Racist Texas, and we will be back next week. So, in the meantime, raise some hell and remember to practice some compassion. Thank you.